Good morning. Today is Tuesday, December 7th, and you're listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Taylor Chalstrom. On this episode, you'll hear about winter pruning and disease management in vineyards and how current methods affect dormant season yield. After that, we'll review today's national and regional news, and we'll finish off the show with information on winter weed management with UCCE weed specialist Brad Hansen. We'll dive in right after this.
Being a member of the California walnut industry means working together to advance the industry through advocacy, research programs, and promoting walnuts with smart, cost-effective marketing, activities that are often too big for one operation to tackle on its own. There are unique ways the California Walnut Board and Commission deliver value. For example, health research gives consumers more reasons to believe in walnuts, while new and improved walnut varieties and production methods increase profitability. And it ensures the issues facing our industry are in the front of government decision makers. Learn more at walnuts.org.
Dormant season practices in vineyards, including pruning and disease management, are of utmost importance. UCCE viticulture farm advisor George Duong said that to understand the relationship between pruning and disease management, one first needs to understand why grapes are pruned in the dormant season.
We prune the vines and we want to set up the desirable shape and desirable structures for the grapes to produce, you know, for many years. Since grapes is a permanent crop, it's not like a annual crop or cash crop. So we need to, have a desirable structure and shape to produce, hopefully 20 years plus. So the first goal of pruning is really try to, clean the extra brushes, extra canes, extra, the dormant shoots to reduce the structure to desirable levels so we can have defined fruiting area and vegetative areas to have a nice structure and a balanced canopy. So that's the first one we want to, set up the shape and the structure. The second one is really try to set up or manipulate the crop for this coming season by, doing different levels of prunings. By set up a different pruning severity or different pruning levels, we can adjust the number of clusters we want for this coming season. So that's the second primary goal for prunings. You want to, set up roughly the number of clusters or the yield target for this coming season. So that's the second goal.
Typically, when prunings are done, Duong said, disease management needs to be taken into close consideration. The most prevalent diseases that might occur during pruning activities are trunk diseases.
So the trunk disease is a primary cause by different funguses. There are major four groups. So basically, they get through into the vines through the pruning cuts. So once you do the prunings right now, and you're going to have a fresh pruning cuts on the vines. So when you have a fungus in the environment, and then, unfortunately, you're going to have some rains or heavy fog, or you're going to use overhead irrigations. With the free water and a fungus, they're going to get into the vines through the pruning cuts. You just did the pruning maybe yesterday or the day before. So that how the vines got fungus into the system and then cause trunk disease. So those vines gonna slowly collapse and basically just lost the production in a few years.
As a common practice, growers will choose one method for pruning during the dormant season. Duong discussed two common methods and why growers might choose one over the other.
The first one, probably the most common one, is called a spur pruning. And what does it mean? That means, you go to the vines right now, a lot of brushes, a lot of canes. You prune the vines back to two buds, along the cordons or the arms. So basically you don't have long canes anymore. You're gonna prune everything back to two buds. So that's called a spur pruning. So instead of canes, you're gonna have a two buds spur. So the two buds on the spur is gonna push out the new shoots for the coming season after bud break. And each shoot's gonna carry one or two clusters. So by doing the spur pruning, you set up number of spurs per vine. And ideally, you're going to set up how many clusters per vine you're going to have. So that's called a spur pruning. It's very common across the whole California, and it's likely, you know, being done on wine grapes, table grapes. So it's most common pruning practice in California, and also it's very easy and cheap. And the second one is a little bit more time consuming, I would say, and can be very expensive, depends on the labor cost. The second one is called a cane pruning. So, you know, as we talk about spur pruning, so cane pruning is instead of, you know, prune every canes or every shoots back to two buds, we just leave long canes. So ideally, depends on the variety and depends on the trellises, the number of buds per cane can be somewhere from, you know, I would say 12 buds per cane to about 20 buds per cane. So it's a long canes with a lot of buds. It's very different from the spur pruning. So why we do that? You know, people ask, you know, why, you know, we do spur pruning on this variety and we do this cane pruning on other varieties. The major reason is that some varieties, for example, the most common varieties here in the Fresno or in the Valley is called Thompson seedless. So this variety genetically has a very low or poor bud fruitfulness at the basal buds. What does that mean? That means if you just do spur pruning, for example, on Thompsons, and there's going to be no clusters push out after bud break. So the basal two buds, once you prune, those two buds are going to produce pure shoots without any clusters. So that's a problem. You know, if you farm raisins, if you farm table grapes from Thompson's, if you do spur pruning, you end up have no clusters at all for the coming season. So that's the main reason why, you know, we do different prunings on different varieties. I will say, you know, most wine grapes, most of the table grapes, the pruning has been done by spur pruning. And the most raisin grapes like Thompson, Fiesta, Semipede, you know, those raisin varieties have been done by cane pruning. And the basal bud fruitfulness is a major reason why we choose different pruning styles or different pruning methods.
Depending on the pruning method, vines will have more cuts, and more cuts means more vulnerability to disease. Disease also depends on weather conditions after prunings are completed, according to Zhuang.
Well, if you can have a lot of free water, such as precipitation, heavy fog, overhead irrigation, you know, with a lot of free waters, the fungus is going to go with the free water and get into the vines through those pruning cuts. So as growers, you just have to be very careful how you do prunings, what you're going to do to prevent those fungus to get into the vines through the pruning cuts.
Zhuang explained that there are four possible trunk diseases growers can experience: Eudipa, Esca, Phomopsis, and Botrytis firia. Each, of course, present a different set of symptoms.
The most obvious symptoms on trunk disease is dead arms or dead cordons. So typically when you notice some vines have, like, you know, half cordon died and half cordon still alive, that's typically is a trunk disease caused by one of those, you know, fungus. And typically we see most trunk disease on older vines because, you know, the trunk disease is kind of a slow vine collapse or slow vine dying. So typically we see the most severe symptoms of a trunk disease on older vines. When I mean old, typically talking about more than 10 years old vines. So those vines may have the most severe, you know, trunk disease symptoms. And in terms of the impact of the trunk disease on the grapevine productivity, like I said, young vines, you know, tend to have less symptoms of the trunk disease, and older vines tend to have more, like, severe symptoms. So typically, once we see, you know, have one of those trunk disease, it's gonna slowly, you know, reduce the yield, slowly reduce the vigor of the vines. So basically, you lost the production gradually, you know, from year one all the way to year 20. And most likely, based on my field experience, after, you know, 12, 13 years, those vines not, you know, economically viable for grape farmers to farm. So typically they just, you know, reduce the economic life of a grapevine vineyard.
Preventative measures are the best mitigation strategy for trunk disease in vineyards. Double pruning or delayed pruning, pruning wound protection, and vineyard sanitation are among specific strategies. The theory behind double pruning or delayed pruning is
to delay the fresh cut as late as possible. So why we do that? There are two reasons. The first one is, like I introduced or discussed before, once you get the pruning done, you're going to have fresh pruning cuts. And the fungus is going to attack the vines or get into the vines through the free water. So you need a free water for the fungus to get into the vines. So what are those events for the free water? Precipitation, heavy fog, and then overhead irrigations. So we can pretty much control the overhead irrigations. Depends on the practice. So we can decide to turn on the pump or, you know, shut down the pump. So we can control the overhead irrigations. The fog, you know, depends on the weather. That's very hard to control. But we can try to, you know, delay the pruning, you know, after the winter precipitation, because we know the most precipitation in the valley going to be somewhere December or January. If we can delay the pruning to for example, late February or early March, that would be ideal, so we can avoid the most winter precipitation in the valley. So we can reduce the chance of free water once we've done our pruning. So that means fungus has less free water to get into the vines through the pruning cuts. And second consideration to do the delayed pruning is because, you know, when we do the prunings at the end of February or early March, the temperature goes up significantly compared to December or January. So once you have a higher temperature, the vines tend to heal themselves much quickly. So that means they can recover those pruning cuts and seal those pruning cuts by vine itself. So every time you have a higher temperature, the activity, the growth of vines is much higher. So basically the reason why we do delay prunings or double pruning is to first avoid the winter precipitation, at least most events, and then try to have a little bit warmer weathers at February or March, have the vines to recover themselves to seal those pruning cuts. So that's the first, which is my favorite preventative measure, which is double pruning and delay prunings. But I understand, talk with a lot of growers or a lot of farmers, the timing is a problem, because ideally we want to delay the pruning until end of February or early March. But the problem is that not many people can do that. It really depends on the labor, depends on the how much acres you're gonna cover. If you have a lot of acres to cover, that is just very hard to do all those acres at one time, basically at the end of February or early March. So I understand this can be a logistic issues, and not everybody can do that. But if you have a large crew and a small acreage, maybe you can still do the double pruning and delay pruning.
Another preventative measure, pruning wound sprays, are essentially fungicidal barriers sprayed onto cuts.
So basically you spray those fungicidal barriers on the pruning cuts to seal those pruning cuts. So basically those fungus cannot get into the vines through those pruning cuts. So that's going to provide protections against trunk disease. So that's the second preventative measures. It can be done, relatively flexible. So once you do the prunings, you just spray it right after.
These sprays, however, come with a cost.
The products, the cost can be variable. So growers, if decide to do this, they have to think about, what's going to be the potential cost there.
Vineyard sanitation is another key preventative measure.
I really mean you have to, cut off those dead arms, cut off those dead cordons, and take them out from the vineyard. Ideally, you want to burn them to destroy all the inoculants inside of those dead arms and dead cordons. So try to reduce the inoculant levels in the vineyard, because if you don't do that, all those dead arms, dead cordons can be the potential hotspot for fungus to spread in the vineyard. But again, you know, it requires a lot of work, a lot of labor, and I understand not many people really want to do that. So, but at least, you know, think about the first two preventative measures, you know, double pruning, delay pruning, and then use a pruning wound protection spray right after prunings. So, you know, if you do both, that's probably give you the most benefits and protection.
That wraps up our first segment of the day. We'll be right back with today's national and regional news after this.
Soil fumigation is a critical step to ensure that your orchard gets off to a good start. Trichlor is a pre-plant soil fumigant and is the foundation for a successful pest management system. Targeted pathogens include soil-borne disease and nematodes. Fumigation helps to create a healthy soil environment that allows the plant's root system to flourish. For more information about Trichlor or to schedule an application, contact Trical Incorporated at 669-327-5076 or visit www.trical.com.
We're back with today's national news talking about the biofuel industry. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack notes his relationship with the Environmental Protection Agency administrator regarding biofuel industry issues such as new renewable fuel standard numbers and the process of granting blending waivers.
I've worked very closely with Administrator Reagan, first and foremost, to reinforce the importance of the EPA providing some stability in the program. I fully expect and anticipate in the very near future the EPA will announce those standards. And I think what's important is that they will likely also respond to the outstanding waiver request, indicating consistency with maintaining stability in the program. We look forward, when those announcements are made, to also be able to provide more details on the distribution of $700 million of assistance and help that we've already identified and earmarked, if you will, for the biofuel industry.
Secretary Vilsack also discussed implementing pandemic assistance payments to biofuel producers. USDA's Rod Bain has more.
USDA recently announced the final pandemic assistance payments to timber harvesters and timber hauling businesses would be issued starting the first full week of December. Yet to be issued is similar assistance to biofuels producers. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack provided an update Friday to reporters, noting the biofuels producer program is currently under consideration at the Office of Management and Budget.
As they look at how we're allocating, how we're deciding to distribute these resources, they may have questions, they have concerns. We have to essentially negotiate at times with the OMB. And that's what we're basically doing. I think we're very, very close to getting that done. And I anticipate and expect that we're going to see this framework in the very near future.
He adds the timing of that announcement could coincide with the Environmental Protection Agency's release of 2021 Renewable Fuel Standards Volume Numbers for blending, an announcement Secretary Vilsack expects in the very near future.
In other news, Secretary Vilsack also broke down recent fundings in resilient and climate-smart rural infrastructure by the USDA programs receiving these investments.
We are looking at providing, under the Community Facility Disaster Program, $35 million to create more resilient rural electric infrastructure, which creates more reliable electricity for residents across rural America. We are investing $356 million in the Renewable Energy for America program, expanding renewable energy systems for farms and small business owners, lowering their costs, resulting in energy savings over time. We're investing $32 million in the Rural Energy Savings Program to create more energy-efficient businesses and farms, also lowering costs, and $3 million being invested in 9 states to expand access to higher blends of biofuels, with a corresponding environmental benefit of less greenhouse gas footprint for those fuels, as well as lowering costs at the pump for consumers.
In today's regional news, it's Healthy Soils Week. This annual celebration aligns with the United Nations World Soils Day and includes a week-long calendar of events from December 6th to 10th, hosted by the California Department of Food and Agriculture, as well as state, federal, and private sector partners. This year, events focus on the valuable role our soils play in improving water infiltration, water quality, and resilience to drought. Healthy soils hold 20 times their weight in water. Increasing soil organic matter on California's working lands by just 1% could save 1.5 million acre-feet of water per year. California Ag Secretary Karen Ross explains, quote, "This year's Healthy Soils Week theme, Solutions from the Soil, Improving California's Drought Resilience, highlights why it is more important than ever to invest in our soil. Farmers and ranchers are stewards of our soil and are key to solutions to address climate change and achieve carbon neutrality. Implementing healthy soil management provides many co-benefits beyond the crops they harvest and the food on our tables. That's something we can all appreciate." End quote. Healthy soil management practices are part of a suite of climate smart agriculture practices and programs developed by CDFA over the past decade. These programs, housed primarily in CDFA's Office of Environmental Farming and Innovation, include the Healthy Soils Program, the State Water Efficiency and Enhancement Program, the Dairy Digester Research and Development Program, and the Alternative Manure Management Program. Thanks to additional investment in this year's budget, these programs will be supported by new or expanded programs to help farmers and ranchers with conservation planning and creating pollinator habitat. You can visit the Healthy Soils Week website for a full calendar of events. That was today's national and regional news. We'll be right back after this break, and you'll hear from UCCE weed specialist Brad Hansen about winter weed management in walnut orchards.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
Winter weed management is part of a year-round IPM program for all tree nut crops, including walnuts. UCCE weed specialist Brad Hansen recommends growers start getting vigilant now in conducting weed surveys as they walk their orchards after harvest.
I would do a survey, ahead of any kind of application window for sure. Like if I'm out there now, after harvest, going into the winter, I want to get a sense of what weeds are coming up now, because that's going to dictate what's in my post-emergent part of that tank mix. So I would be doing that ahead of, while making a decision anytime, because of the post-emergent herbicide component.
Pre-emergent applications, Hansen said, should be based on records of what happened last winter or spring.
So it's a two-part. You want to know what's out there now that you need to control, but also what was there, because that's what's going to probably be there next year as well.
In terms of surveying for weeds in orchards, Hansen noted that complicated weed survey plans are typically overkill, adding that surveying mostly requires simply going up and down representative blocks to get a sense of weed presence.
You just want to be out and about in those orchards, not one end, not one corner, just a drive-through while you're doing other operations, right? You're calling, you're fixing irrigation, you're doing mummy sanitation, just, paying attention to what's going on. And kind of either make a mental note or a physical note if you're that kind of record keeper. It's just getting out and observing, really, a representative sample of the field or the fields that you're trying to manage.
There might be a situation, however, where doing a full-fledged survey is necessary.
I might do that if I picked up new plants, new ground. Like if I was really trying to get a sense of, okay, well, what did I get myself into? I might do something a little bit more structured that would be more akin to your soil sampling. I mean, maybe not quite that much, but, really sort of grid off a field and just think about, okay, well, in the northwest quadrant, I have this problem. The southeast, I have this general problem. But I'd probably only do something more formal the first year I was farming something, quite honestly. The rest of it is just being familiar with the site.
Many growers are currently going about seeding their winter cover crops. Hansen noted that cover crops can mitigate weed establishment in row middles.
It's really, my quote usually is something like, cover crops are predictable, manageable vegetation to displace the unpredictable, unmanageable vegetation that you don't want. So you want to give that cover crop a fast start, because really it's a matter of getting what gets there first. We'll get most of the resources. So if I can get my cover crop planted into moist soil and it's got a chance to get going, it will displace a lot of weeds. Now, cover crops are not generally going to give you 100% weed control, but they can really help put a thumb on the scale of what weeds are there during the winter and create just competition with that. That's easier to predict, right?
Okay.
And easier to manage. So it's one of my colleagues used to say that weed competition is not a wrestling match, it's a foot race. So anything you can do to give the plants you want a head start on that foot race, they're more likely to be successful. It's not really that you have something that's so robust that it's going to wrestle back ground that was already lost.
In Walnut Orchard's annual weeds to look out for in January and February include annual bluegrass, California burr clover, common chickweed, little mallow, aka cheeseweed, and mustards, among others. Some annuals, however, can provide similar functions to cover crops, according to UCIPM guidelines.
A lot of growers, particularly in the northern part of the state where it gets rainier and the soils are more clayey, they call it resident vegetation, right? They leave whatever comes up because it's fillery and malva and things like that. Yeah, I mean, the cover crop, as far as orchard access, or not the cover, the weeds, the resident vegetation, it can do a lot of the same functions in terms of providing, you know, trafficability for winter operations. Yeah, I mean, many of the same functions are managed by the vegetation that they're naturally. It's really a matter of if you're okay with that particular vegetation or if you want to change it into something else. You know, if it's fillery and ryegrass, that's probably not so bad. If it's malva and hairy fleabane or, you know, some kind of perennial weed, that might be something you want to have different control of.
Perennial weeds should not be left in orchards. UCIPM guidelines recommend checking ground cover in row middles for perennial seedlings and regrowth of perennials a few weeks after cultivation. Perennials to look out for in walnut orchards include Bermuda grass, curly dock, dandelion, Dallas grass, and field bindweed, among others. The grower's final decision for keeping resident vegetation in their orchards will be dependent on the particular species, orchard location, and goals for said orchard, according to Hansen. Different functions of vegetation require different management inputs.
One grower might not want that fillery and ryegrass because they think those are major weed problems and they'd rather have mustards and cereal grain cover crops, while the next grower might say, you know, I get 80% of the function but none of the cost. I'm okay with the fillery and ryegrass, right? But there's a bit of eye of the beholder as well, aspect to that as well. It's just really important for a manager, a farmer, a pest control advisor, whoever, to think about what the goals are that they're trying to achieve. If they want, you know, 100% weed control, well, that's going to require a certain level of input. If they want to get a certain functionality with vegetation, That might be a different kind of input.
That about wraps up our show today. Thank you for listening. This is Taylor Chalstrom reporting for My Ag Life.
Salty, closed soils can render your crops unproductive. D-Sol, formulated by AgroPlanté, is specially designed for sodic and saline sodic soils. D-Sol will displace sodium and wash it out of the root zone with irrigation to enhance your soil structure, water penetration, and vitality by decreasing soil salinity. AgroPlanté's D-Sol flocculates your soil to promote soil aeration and drainage. With D-Sol, you'll create a better soil environment for your crop roots and optimize yield. Contact AgroPlanté today to find out more at 559-498-0388 or visit us at agroplanté.com.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.